Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Co-Sleeping. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Adriana. And today we're talking all about breastfeeding. We've been really looking forward to covering this topic. It's something that Amanda and I are both doing. Today we're here with Morgan Jackson, nurse and lactation consultant of Prepared Beginnings Lactation. Welcome, Morgan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good morning, Morgan. As Adriana said, this is an episode that we've been wanting to do for so long. I know we were just talking a little bit before we hit record about kind of where I'm at in my breastfeeding journey. So before we dive in and ask you all of our questions, could you just tell our listeners a little bit about you and the work that you do?
Yes, I'd love to. My name is Morgan Jackson, and I live in the Midwest of the United States. So I am in Kansas City, Missouri, and I live with my husband and our two boys. We have a 5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. The 1.5-year-old is still breastfeeding. I have been a nurse for, such a long time, about 8 years, and a lactation consultant since 2020 when I became an international board certified lactation consultant, which is a mouthful, but it's just a long way of saying breastfeeding expert. I have a deep passion for breastfeeding education and putting the power in the hands of moms and families so that they feel ready to breastfeed, ready to take on some of the challenges, but also ready to enjoy the experience of breastfeeding and all of the ups and downs and the benefits. One of my passions is also talking about weaning and how to close out the breastfeeding journey, because there seems to be a lot of information on how to get started, but not so much information on how to stop.
Yeah, I know that I felt like I had some level of resources before giving birth to my son. He's now 20 months old and I'm still breastfeeding him. I'm aware that there are some resources available to me through the hospital and wasn't fully versed in the challenges that could arise or things that I might want to be aware of, or really how breastfeeding even worked, just like the ins and outs, like the mechanics of it, like our anatomy and how this all works. I had such a little understanding of that. And I think it would have been really helpful in the beginning to have known that. So what do you think, Morgan, what can a mom, a new mom, especially first-time moms, do while pregnant to prepare for her breastfeeding journey if she is planning on breastfeeding?
I love that question because, like you were saying, a lot of us go into breastfeeding not really knowing a ton. So you're definitely not alone in that, Adriana. Before becoming a lactation consultant, I worked in public health. My job was to go into families' homes, first time expecting families' homes, and talk to them about becoming parents and providing lots of education on bonding and attachment and developmental milestones and breastfeeding. I learned early on that, one, there was a lack of education on my end. Even as a nurse, breastfeeding isn't something that we learned about in my maternal child health courses. It's not something that we were tested on or anything like that. And so there was a lack of education on my end as the healthcare provider, and then a lack of education on the parents' end in terms of common breastfeeding terms or even anatomy, like you were saying. So starting off by defining different parts of breast tissue and what is their function. The best way that I can really put out there when it comes to preparing is learning about our bodies as women who are going to be birthing and then feeding babies, and then also learning how the process of breastfeeding works. What does it mean when your colostrum comes in? What does it mean when your colostrum transitions to mature breast milk? What does it mean when we say that we're going to latch a baby deeply onto the breast tissue, not just on the nipple? Really familiarizing ourselves with terms that will on the back end help a new parent to feel prepared instead of feeling overwhelmed when you have a baby and then all of a sudden you're now responsible for not just keeping them alive, but also feeding them too and recovering from childbirth. Taking a class that's really in depth and not just a surface level breastfeeding class. Typically, I say start with your local hospital or birthing center because they probably have classes every month. A lot of times they're online, and so you can just register and show up for a class. If that's not something, then look for an online course that's self-paced where you can learn the ins and outs of breastfeeding in the first few months instead of getting overwhelmed and trying to do deep dives on Google or learn from social social media post, sit down and take a structured course with a lactation professional.
And I know for me personally, when I was pregnant, I feel like there was so much like outside noise. There's so much that you have to prepare for. When it came to breastfeeding, for me, it was kind of like, yeah, of course I'm going to do it. Like I didn't put much thought into it. And I was really lucky that the people around me who already had children, more specifically my sister, she had what, you know, outside looking in, for me, it looked like she had a very easy breastfeeding journey. And I know if she's listening, she's going to be like, how dare you say that? Because it was anything but that. But for 23-year-old me at the time looking, I'm like, oh man, she's got that unwrapped. That stuff's easy. I can do that. And then after my daughter was born and I'm, you know, putting her to my breast and they're, you know, they're looking at me like, well, did you take a class? Like, you know what to do, right? And I'm like, no, like she doesn't know what to do. I don't know what I'm doing. I think you don't know how it's supposed to feel. If you've never breastfed before, you may think like, this is good. She's getting the milk she needs. And that happened with me. And, you know, my daughter wasn't even latching properly the first few hours. And I'm so thankful for the lactation consultants who came into the hospital and really showed us like, this is what a proper latch looks like. This is how you can tell that she's sucking. This is how we can tell that she's getting enough. And a lot of the time, sometimes they just hand you that paper and they're like, okay, like write when she nurses and stuff. And I'm like, I don't even know where I am right now. Like, I don't know what time it is to write on here. I know my advice for new moms is always to really utilize the resources that your hospital does have, because I think oftentimes we get so caught up in, you know, visitors or really just, you know, if you had a traumatic birth, just like survival, that we kind of let that fall to the wayside. So I want to talk a little bit about the first few days after birth. I know you touched on it a little bit, you know, your milk coming in. We've heard terms like that. What should a new mom expect the first few days after giving birth?
The first few days are definitely a whirlwind, to put it gently. There's so much that goes into having a baby and recovering, and then you're meeting this child for the first time and integrating them into your family or becoming a family. There's a lot of emotions, and then also like the physical shift that happens from being pregnant to being postpartum. In the first few days after having a baby, breastfeeding looks so differently for everyone and it fluctuates. But there's some like common occurrences that most people can anticipate happening. The first one is having the first latch right after delivery during the golden hour, which is the first 60 to 90 minutes after a baby's birth. And hopefully they're put right on mom's chest to have immediate skin-to-skin contact, which is really important to expose baby to mom's microbiome. And then also for immediate reassurance of safety and comfort, because they're hearing mom's voice, hearing her heartbeat, smelling her, and then tasting colostrum for the first time. And so they're being integrated very quickly, but also it is the first initiation of milk production. In the first breastfeeding session, we want that to occur in the golden hour, so that the body is signaled to make milk. During pregnancy, our body is making colostrum behind the scenes, but it doesn't know to kick milk production into gear until the placenta is birthed. And so the first latch is really, really important. It typically occurs around the time that the placenta is being birthed. What happens is hormone levels spike and our body kicks milk production into gear. And so the first day, you have that really big first session. And then I don't know about for you all, but there's typically a lull of about 4 to 6 hours of deep sleep for that newborn. And there's always babies that stay wide awake, which is always pretty funny. But typically a newborn will sleep for about a 4 to 6 hour stretch. During that time, I encourage moms to rest if they can. The rest of that first 24 hours is a lot of trying to get baby on, offering the breast, hand expressing and offering colostrum if they're not latching, that sort of thing. On the second day, babies are typically a little bit more awake. They're starting to do some cluster feeding, which means that they're having frequent breastfeeding sessions that might last for long spans of time. Typically on the second night is when we see a really big shift in feedings, where baby is constantly at the breast. They're really looking to eat. There's an increase in colostrum production, where on the first day, moms are typically making about 5 to 10 mL of feeding. We're seeing a shift to about 15 or more mLs. So that's also about the equivalent of 3 teaspoons of milk. So we're seeing that increase. On the third day, sometimes it's the rockiest and hardest day, in that immediate postpartum period for a few different reasons. Depending on where you are, it could be day of discharge from the hospital. If not, it's also a day where the realization of the fact that, oh my gosh, I just had a baby that I'm now responsible for. And I love them so much, but gosh, this is a lot. So there's some realizations that hit on the third day. Typically, pain is more apparent on the third day because we're not on that emotional high that we were on after childbirth. And so hormone levels are balancing a little bit. And so adrenaline levels have dropped. And we realize that we might be sore. Maybe hemorrhoids have flared up, or there's some really uncomfortable postpartum pains going on. If someone had a cesarean section, they might be more aware of incisional pain, that sort of thing. And all of those contribute to reasons that breastfeeding can be really rocky on the third day. We're exhausted, and now this baby is really wanting to latch. And because of the frequency in feedings, nipple pain can be pretty intense. So not to paint a dark picture of the first few days, but it's just that reality of sometimes the first few days are a really big transition and can be surprising for families. So what I like to do is set my clients up for success of breaking down how we can support ourselves in those early days by really advocating for rest, advocating for quiet times in the hospital if you're birthing in the hospital. If there's a birth partner or a family member or support person, really encouraging them to take over on skin to skin so that mom can rest when she can. Eating really nourishing meals and then practicing good breast care, which can be as simple as hand expressing and allowing colostrum to air dry on nipples and then applying ice packs. Those two things are very simple to implement and accessible to most people and can be done after every breastfeeding session to help as well.
I love that you're mentioning making sure that we're taking care of ourselves by having a support person or a partner take over on things like skin to skin and nourishing ourselves. I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your top breastfeeding must-haves. For me, not so much a must-have, but just like a must-know is how important hydrating and just taking care of your own body through nourishing yourself, through making sure you're eating regularly. That was so important for me to feel like okay. And I'm using the term okay really loosely here. I did have a C-section. And so breastfeeding was definitely rocky in the beginning for me, very rocky. I was not prepared. I don't know that anyone really is. It's something that you kind of have to live through to get the hang of and to understand. But I absolutely think that education is important. And what you're mentioning in terms of having that support, if you're able to, is super important. A must have, the one thing that I just felt was like a lifesaver for me, and I guess I didn't really think about it before I had my son, was the boppy or like just some kind of a pillow. They're so teeny and like it's so hard to like get into a comfortable position while they're breastfeeding. Even if you learn all the poses and all the things, especially if you have a C-section, it's tough to get around in those first couple of weeks. It's tough to kind of find your bearings and figure out what works for you, what's comfortable, posture, all of those things. And so just having that pillow and that support, being able to rest him on that and myself a bit on that and be more mindful about my posture, just having that breastfeeding pillow, doesn't really matter the brand, I just happen to have a boppy, was like my one must have on top of water, hydration, and food. But Morgan, I'd love to hear from you. What are some of your top breastfeeding must haves?
I love that question. I get this question a lot. My answer seems to change as I work with more and more moms in the home. Before I was in the hospital, and so I was seeing that immediate postpartum period. But now that I'm in the home, I see things so differently. And so there are definitely products and must-knows. I love that you said that. So it's not always a must-have, but a must-know. Things would be definitely having a boppy or some sort of pillow. It doesn't even have to be a special breastfeeding pillow. It could just be a pillow that you can fold over easily or squish very, you know, well, and you can mesh it to your body and your baby's body. If someone has one of those amazing pregnancy pillows, you can use that in the immediate postpartum period because it's long enough and large enough to wrap around you and baby, and then you're both super comfy. especially if you're doing like a side lying position or you're reclined on the couch or the bed. Other things that I think are really necessary would be understanding how to hand express and to remove milk manually, because in the early days, you might not have access to a pump. Sometimes a baby is born early and a parent hasn't ordered their breast pump yet, and it'll take a while to get to their home from the insurance company. So knowing how to manually express milk, having a hand pump, which you can grab from Walmart or Target for less than $15, is really important. And having support is also something that is irreplaceable and needs to happen. So whether that's family, friends, a doula, having support is key. In terms of products, I always encourage my moms to keep coconut oil close by, because you can use that as lubricant for pumping and also for breast care, because coconut oil has an antibacterial and antifungal property and it's safe for babies. So you can put a thin layer of coconut oil on your nipples after latching to promote healing and good skin integrity. And also there's a product that I love called Silverettes. I'm not like sponsored by them or anything, but I just love the Silverette line because I think they have a couple of things now, but they're just, if you're not familiar, they're these small little silver cups that fit right over your nipple and rest against your areola. They promote skin healing in a way that doesn't require any special creams or lotions or anything else. All you need are your breasts and these nipple cups. You put them on after you breastfeed, and the silver interacts with our skin and promotes very quick healing. You can buy them online. They have two sizes, one for larger breasts and one for smaller. And I love that you can use them throughout the breastfeeding journey and with multiple kids as well. Or you can give them away to a friend. I mean, they're pure silver, so it's just like earrings, because people kind of cringe when I say, oh, you can clean them and give them to someone else. I'm like, it's silver. It's not like a plastic or anything that's absorbing bacteria or anything like that. And silver is just on its own a natural healing agent. Always, if moms have access to buying Silverettes, encourage that as well.
I'm on their website now because I've never heard of them. I'm looking at them. Wow. So something similar that I used that I feel like I never heard people talk about until I needed one was actually a nipple shield. So that's something that I didn't know even existed until I started breastfeeding. And I know you'll be able to explain a bit more of what it is, but I used it to help my daughter get a deeper latch. So it's helpful if you have like flat or inverted nipples. And it also helped a lot with the pain. I was able to wean off of that at about 3 months. But then at around 9 months, when she started biting a lot, I was able to use that again because it kind of gave like a shield of protection from my nipple being, you know, torn up. So that was really helpful. But I'm thinking these Silverettes would have been really helpful too, to kind of help with, you know, the pain and when I would get cuts and things like that. So I just wanted to mention that because I feel like people don't really talk about needing, you know, extra assistance. A lot of the times if people hear that they have trouble latching, they're just quick to be like, oh, I don't know, my baby didn't latch. But there are so many different tools and resources out there to help.
Yes, that's so true. There's lots of tools and products that can be really beneficial. Even if you use them for a short span of time, they can help bridge the gap from struggling to really feeling confident in breastfeeding. I used a nipple shield with both of my children early on. My first, we used a nipple shield for maybe the first 4 months or so. And then the second, we used a nipple shield for the first few weeks. And so I definitely love them as a product. I fit moms for them all of the time. And I think that if anyone is having trouble with their baby maintaining a latch or staying on, then working with the lactation consultant to find out if a nipple shield is the right tool for you is a good next step. Nipple shields are not a permanent solution, but they are a temporary fix to help a baby achieve a deep latch, because it is almost like a second nipple going on top of the breast, and it just elongates and widens the breast tissue and gives babies a really firm surface to attach to, which can be helpful for a baby that's born early, a baby that was introduced to bottles right away, an infant that has low tone or any other developmental delays or anomalies. It can be really important to introduce a nipple shield to make sure breastfeeding gets off the ground. And in my son's case, it was really helpful because he actually had high tone, which meant every time he was at the breast, it felt like he was chomping and biting because his jaw was so tight. And so a nipple shield helped a lot with that. Working with the lactation consultant to find the right one is really helpful too.
So I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about the benefits of breastfeeding. This is another thing that I heard so frequently kind of thrown around, just that it's so good for mom, it's so good for baby. And I knew that. But if someone were to ask me at that time before I had my son, like, well, what about it is so good? I could maybe tell you one or two things, but I wasn't well-versed in what that meant. And I think a lot of people talk about how good it is for both mom and baby, but we don't necessarily talk about why. So Morgan, could you walk us through some of the actual benefits, just the scientific, the facts? What are some of the benefits of breastfeeding for not only our babies, but for us?
So I'm going to start with the benefits for mom, because those are typically overlooked. One of the primary benefits is protection from postpartum hemorrhage and excessive bleeding in the postpartum period. And so right off the bat, immediately after labor and delivery, having that baby on during the golden hour and having them attached to the breast, or if they can't, then doing hand expression or pumping is really important because immediately the uterus will begin to shrink down to its normal size. And I think a lot of us know that our uterus grows from about the size of our fist to the size of a watermelon during pregnancy. When prolactin and oxytocin levels are spiked after having a baby and then attaching them to the breast, those two hormones actually signal to our brain to start returning to normal. And so the uterus begins to shrink back down to size. That causes like some cramping and contraction type pain, but it's a protective mechanism that breastfeeding provides to help reduce the chance of postpartum hemorrhage. I think that's one benefit that gets overlooked so often, and it's so important. And I think even if someone wasn't interested in breastfeeding for a long span of time, they would probably consider, just for that benefit alone, to latch for the first few days. Another amazing benefit is the longer that someone breastfeeds or produces milk, the more protection they have against different types of breast cancers and ovarian cancers. The caveat to that is you don't see those benefits until you've lactated for at least 12 months, but that can be combined over time. So if someone has 3 children, they breastfeed them each for 6 months. Well, now we've gotten 18 months of breastfeeding, and that produces some protection against breast cancer and ovarian cancer. Another benefit is if someone has gestational diabetes or gestational hypertension or preeclampsia, then that puts them at greater risk for developing heart disease and type 2 diabetes later on in life. Breastfeeding actually helps to decrease the chances of someone who had gestational diabetes developing type 2 diabetes, and it also helps to protect our heart from heart disease later on in life. And those two diseases are fairly common in the maternal world. And so having that built-in protection is pretty amazing. So those are the main benefits that I love to kind of boast about when it comes to breastfeeding and mom's health. There's lots of other things, but those are the two that get me most excited. In terms of protection for baby, or like benefits for baby, is we hear a lot today about things like leaky gut syndrome, food allergies, food sensitivities. Well, colostrum actually goes in and it coats and seals the gut to protect it against developing things like GI disorders, irritable bowel syndrome, celiac disease, and food allergies and sensitivities. It's literally providing a coat of armor in an infant's gut, so that way they're less likely to absorb and have reactions to foods and medications, which is pretty amazing. When a baby is breastfed, their oral palate develops properly to promote correct jaw structure and strength. And so I think that's also something that in this, age of education, you hear a lot about breathing well and sleeping with your mouth closed and having proper oral development in terms of oral ties and that sort of thing. Breastfeeding helps to develop the jaw properly. And so we're less likely to see mouth breathing, snoring, sleep apnea later on in life. Breastfeeding, yes, we do it early on in an infant's life, but it lasts them a lifetime.
Oh, I love that. And that's what's for me so incredible about breastfeeding because, you know, like I mentioned, my daughter will be 4 in October and we've been nursing. And I didn't know that about the hemorrhaging after birth and, you know, things like that. There's so much benefits. And I think we're, you know, we often hear about the benefits for our children and why it's good for them. But I agree with you, Adriana. If somebody asked me, especially now, I'd be like, I don't know. We're just doing it. It's really good. She's getting antibodies. For me, the benefits, especially now breastfeeding an older child, has always been more about the comfort aspect of it, the closeness, the security, the bond, and less about the nutritional needs at this point. Although I do know it is still, of course, very beneficial for her to be nursing.
Hey everyone, I know Amanda and I have talked a lot about our postpartum journeys, self-care being a big part of that. Our friends over at Oh Hey Mama Hair have created a line of plant-based scalp care products for postpartum moms. Their products are herbal-based, clean, and small batch, and they're crafted right here in the US.
And I love that they contain essential oils because not only does it leave my hair smelling great, but it's also really hard to find clean products that will actually work. Their line of hair repair includes a hair serum, scalp wash, which is what I've been using the last few months, and a conditioner. They contain ingredients called DHT blockers, which can topically fight back against the hormonal causes of thinning and shedding.
Which is definitely something I struggled with. So we've talked so much about the importance of self-care, and this routine is perfect for not only new postpartum moms, but moms that feel like their hair never just really recovered after having their baby.
And yes, that was me. I feel like after having my daughter, I kept waiting for my hair to kind of snap back to what it was pre-pregnancy. And it kept snapping, but just in a different way.
I bet it feels so good to have a routine and to do something actionable to actually take care of your scalp and hair. Things like that always really make me feel a bit more like myself.
And it also feels really good that the scalp wash has allowed me to stretch my wash days so I'm not stuck washing and styling my hair every day because, let's be honest, I obviously don't have time for that.
That is a must for postpartum moms or seasoned moms. So to learn more about Oh Hey Mama's line of products and take control of your hair loss, head on over to ohheymamahair.com and use our exclusive discount code, COSLEEPING10. That's COSLEEPING10 for 10% off your order.
I want to talk a little bit about weaning. All of the questions, even just today, we put our Secret Saturday question box up and somebody submitted a secret about wanting to wean their 14-month-old and feeling guilty. And I know I'm kind of at a season in my life where I always thought that I would, you know, have my daughter self-wean. I never thought I'd be nursing an almost 4-year-old. And to keep it real, I'm kind of done. I kind of want to be over it a little bit. I love it still, but I'm getting to the point where it would be nice to have a bit of my body back before, you know, wanting to have another child. I know you have an awesome course that's out, the gentle weaning course that we're going to dive into and talk about, but how do you know if it's time to wean? I know a lot of the times we go based off of mom, but is there any child cues and things of that nature as well?
I love that question because there is a lot of mom guilt around weaning and trying to navigate if it's time or not. But some of the biggest cues or signs that we see in a child or older toddler is definitely just lack of interest. They've kind of moved on to other things. As soon as they're latched in your lap, if there's something, I call it a better offer. If there's a better offer, they kind of hop down and move along. They hear a song or the TV turns on and they're like, oh, you know what? I'd rather watch Bluey then stay latched right now. Or if you don't offer and they aren't bothered by it, they don't ask, they continue to play or move on with the routine, that's a sign that maybe they have started to, you know, process the fact that breastfeeding's coming to an end or whatever need breastfeeding was meeting, they no longer have that need. And it sounds really sad to say that, but it's also great because you can look back and think, wow, my baby, my toddler, my child had this need that I was able to meet for a year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, whatever the case is. In your case, 4 years. And that's a huge accomplishment to know that you met a huge need for your child and you were there.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm like, that's something to be celebrated. I also also think other signs in toddlers is if breastfeeding has been a cornerstone of your like bedtime routine, and all of a sudden they're really not looking to nurse, you offer it and that they might take it, but not really, then that's another sign that they're done. Looking for those subtle cues can help give us a sign that our baby, our toddler, is ready to move on.
We haven't fully transitioned from breastfeeding to sleep. He's actually breastfeeding right now in like a half nap sleep as we speak. But for bedtimes, we're getting to the point now where he'll nurse, but it's not enough for him to fall fully asleep for bedtime. So he'll nurse and he'll look for something else. Like, okay, the nursing is not cutting it for like putting him into a deep sleep. So what I've actually transitioned to is telling him stories, and I'll make up stories based on like what his current interests are, which are Blue's Clues, Spider-Man, and just bugs in general. We're doing story times for bed and he's really enjoying that, and it's putting him into that deep sleep that breastfeeding used to. And while it's bittersweet, it's amazing as a mom to watch these transitions unfold. I think it's a little easier for me to say because he's still breastfeeding, so we still kind of have that connection and we still have those moments, but the way in which he's needing it is different now than it used to be. Can you talk a little bit about the different styles of weaning and how to choose what might be right for you and your toddler, or you and your baby? And it could be at any age. This doesn't have to be toddlerhood specific, like we just talked about. There is no right or wrong time to stop breastfeeding. It's really what works for you and what works for your child, and sometimes more so what works for you as a mom than anything else. Can you talk to us about some of the different styles of weaning?
Yes. So there's three different styles of weaning and they can overlap. Just like with breastfeeding, it's not an all or nothing method. You can breastfeed, you can breast and bottle feed, you can breast and formula feed. There's so many different variations, and it's the same thing with weaning. There's three approaches. You can abruptly wean, which means there is a huge shift, maybe a medical emergency or a sudden change in location. Maybe mom and baby are no longer together. And so abrupt weaning means that weaning stops immediately for whatever reason. And now we're trying to quickly dry up milk so that mom is comfy, and then replace breast milk with an alternative for the child. There's another kind of weaning, which is sort of in between abrupt and gradual, and it's called scheduled weaning. And scheduled weaning is when you have a particular milestone or date in mind for when you are going to wean, and you're actively moving towards it. Let's say someone's goal is to breastfeed for 20 months. You would start preparing to wean a few months out and start talking to your toddler about that. You would start preparing your body, that sort of thing. And so you're scheduling it. Some moms want to wean when their baby starts teething. There's lots of different goals that people have. And my job as a lactation consultant is to help them meet their goals. Gradual weaning, which is what I help moms with most often. Gradual weaning is when you're just naturally letting the breastfeeding journey close out on its own, but you're slowing down in terms of offering the breast or pumping and starting to let your body naturally decrease the amount of milk that it's producing. Adriana, what you've been doing, which is swapping out breastfeeding for something else that's also still bonding, promotes bonding and closeness, which is doing the storytelling. That's a strategy that I often implement with my moms, is switching out breastfeeding with something else that is still creating lots of memories. It's still boosting oxytocin levels. When you snuggle up and you're telling a story to your son, you both are feeling so happy and warm and safe and connected, just like you do with breastfeeding without the act of feeding. A lot of times I help parents find something that works for them and their particular child, or if they have younger children that they're still breastfeeding, because sometimes you might wean an older child that's 3 or 4 because you're breastfeeding a newborn or a younger baby and you no longer want to tandem nurse. And so I'll help parents find strategies to talk to that older toddler or preschooler about weaning, even though mom's still going to be making milk, because I think that plays a key role as well when someone's deciding to wean, is what else is going on in their life. There's a lot of books that you can read, children's books. I like doing weaning parties to just celebrate the closing out of the weaning journey, and knowing that it does take time for our bodies to adjust. The longer that you've made milk, the more it's just been a part of your normal health routine. Understanding that things will shift in terms of cycles, weight can fluctuate. Sometimes weight loss occurs. Weaning depression can occur, where you feel almost like baby blues, where you feel sad and down for a couple of weeks. There might be changes in eating habits, because breastfeeding cravings are real, just like pregnancy cravings are real. Maybe even a sense of loss, something that's been a major part of your life for a while that you've enjoyed is now coming to a close. And so finding some new hobbies or some new ways to really invest in ourselves during the weaning process is important as well.
I love all of those points that you just made. And I love the idea of like what Adrianna is doing and kind of introducing something else, because I feel like with the stage that I'm in where I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of ready. I can tell. I was laughing when you said like when the TV comes on and they'd rather watch Bluey, because if we're nursing and the TV comes on, my daughter will say, leave your milk open. I'm just going to dance real quick. And I'm like, I'm not sitting here like this. But I've started like if she asked during the day, I'm like, oh, do you want like hot chocolate or seltzer water? Not that I want her, you know, filling up on seltzer water, eating chips at 9 a.m. I'm trying to balance, just offer alternatives and not just necessarily say no, because that's harder for her to get a grasp of. There's so much mom guilt that surrounds really everything that we do. I feel like in the beginning stages of breastfeeding, I would be shamed or guilted for nursing in public or nursing to sleep or having, you know, really my whole life kind of revolve around nourishing an infant. And now that my daughter is older, I'm getting, you know, the guilt of, okay, now I kind of want to stop. And society has this way of shaming moms for doing anything that deviates away from normal, whether it's 3 months or 3 years, you know, the decision to start or end a breastfeeding journey should be up to mom and baby. So how do we get over the hurdle of not only society's pressures of when to wean, but also kind of the mom guilt that is somehow embedded in that as well?
Society has a wonderful way of shaming moms. You're right, Amanda. And so
yes. I was led to believe that when my daughter turned 12 months one day, for whatever unlogical reason, my milk was no longer, you know, quote unquote enough. She needed to somehow switch to some different species of milk, because that's it. She's 12 months one day, you know, your breast milk no longer has the antibodies that she needs. And that's why, you know, really our breastfeeding journey has been so much more than the nutrition. And I know a lot of moms who are listening can agree with that, that it's not just about food, you know, it's comfort, it's closeness. Like you said, it's been, I mean, I haven't known any different for the past 4 years. I've nursed to sleep every single night for the past, I don't even know how many days that is. I can't do math, but a lot of time. 1,200
right,
something
exactly,
days.
A long time.
Gosh, that's 7 full-time jobs.
Wow. And to say.
No, that's not correct math.
Well, but it is. That's a lot of days. To diminish it all is a shame and a pity, because you've put in 4 years of breastfeeding. You know, with my first, I weaned him at 12 months because he was no longer interested. My second, who knows when we'll stop? Like, the boy loves to breastfeed. And so it's a shame and a pity to diminish the breastfeeding journey and all of the benefits. It really does us a disservice to narrow down breastfeeding so much to say, oh, well, you hit that 12-month mark. Thanks for all you did. Like, your time's up. You did your job. And to cut moms off that way and to cut children off that way. And like you said, to then replace it, because there's still a need for milk. So then to replace it with something else, unless that's the desire of a family, then we need to support parents in however long they want to breastfeed. Stress levels are lower when a mom and baby are able to breastfeed for as long as they desire without feeling judged or feeling like they have to closet nurse. And I also think that it's good to put it on display, because other moms will see, oh, okay, that mom's 25 months out. She's still going strong. I can too. It also helps to rebuild a cultural norm of breastfeeding, where around the world, most infants are feeding beyond 2 years. And it's really just in the US where we're seeing the shorter spans of time. the more we celebrate breastfeeding, the more we talk about it and normalize it, the less shame that we'll see around extended breastfeeding or even weaning later on. And if a mom is feeling guilty, maybe because she's weaning or because she's not weaning, then just remembering that we have to make decisions that work best for our family. And no one else has to live with those decisions but us. And so feeling confident in those choices, I always remind my clients, this is just one of the many choices that you're going to have to make for yourself and for your child. And so if it's not, you know, stressing over weaning, you're going to be stressing over the next thing. So looking at it in the full scheme of things is the fact that no matter how long you breastfeed, you should be confident in that choice. And it sounds easy, but cancel out the noise around us and not worry about what society is saying is right or wrong when it comes to breastfeeding or lactating.
And Morgan, before we sign off here, can you discuss your gentle weaning course with us just a bit so that for folks that are interested, they know what to expect?
Yes. So the Gentle Weaning Academy is what I call a living course because I update it every month with new modules. And so it's a place where moms can come and learn about weaning, learn different strategies that they can implement to help themselves and their child adjust to weaning, but also to hear from other professionals. So there's a sleep coach who has a course inside of the Gentle Weaning Academy. There's a certified herbalist that has a module inside of the academy where she talks about how to use herbs to help your body dry up milk in a safe way. I share my personal weaning journey. And then there's a live chat every month where I answer questions. And so it's brand new. I just launched it last month. And so each month there's new content on, like, upcoming content we have is about how do you introduce new foods as you're weaning. And we just launched a module on talking to your toddler about weaning. So there's lots of different kind of elements inside of the Gentle Weaning Academy. But the whole idea behind it is it's a safe space to come and learn about weaning without any guilt or shame. You also have access to ask questions, which is nice instead of having to like Google and look up different things. And then know that you're in a community with other moms and you can leave messages in the message board or comments and that sort of thing. And so it's really just a fun place to come and pop in and learn about weaning.
I love that because we get so many questions all the time, you know, how do I do this? You know, I was prepared to breastfeed and now what's next? So before we go, we ask all of our guests, what is your go-to coffee order?
Ooh, okay. I'm an oat milk kind of girl. So I really like just like an iced coffee with oat milk or a latte. And then I'll add, you know, vanilla or cinnamon. So pretty basic, just like a nice, you know, iced coffee with oat milk is what I normally get.
There's nothing wrong with basic. It gets the job done. I agree with that. I'm an oat milk girl myself. So I want to thank you again so much for coming on, Morgan. This was really an episode that we've been wanting to do for a really long time, just to get these resources out there. And like you said, really normalize the conversation surrounding breastfeeding. So thank you, Morgan, so much.
Thank you both for having me. This was such a great conversation. And thanks for sharing about your journeys as well.